Good morning, and that's it for Ear Buddies with Carole King, 77 years old. Wow. It's like, I don't know. And what was the other thing? 9 Cent Records?
Oh, yeah.
9 Cent Records. Arlington Heights. Yeah, we were excited here about Arlington Heights actually having a record store. Is there anything like that left over there? There's a bookstore still. Not Arlington Heights, but like, what do they call the middle part of Arlington near the...
Arlington Center.
Arlington Center. Yeah. There's a bookstore still there.
The book rack.
Yeah. All right, take care. And that's it for Ear Buddies for the day. And we're going to move on to talk and music from a working class Democratic Socialist standpoint, viewpoint, and that is also known as Socialist Radio. Now, for previous listeners, yes, we dropped the word alternative. We're changing our name for a variety of reasons, streamlining. So Socialist Radio here for the next 2 hours with myself, Jeff, and...
Diego's
in. Now, Diego, I didn't hear your mic. That's my fault. Yeah. Try again.
Mic check.
Try again. Yep, I can
mic
hear you.
Mic check.
No,
okay.
You're all set. Say Diego,
all right. Diego.
If you want to. That's your name. Yeah, Diego co-hosting today with me. You just had an operation, huh?
Yeah.
But went well.
It went well.
Yeah.
I can see now.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting for that Terminator. What was that? I was watching a lot of sci-fi this week. Where, you know, damn it, they didn't give me the, I can look at somebody and identify who it is.
Yeah, you need that. You need that these days.
Feel like a cyborg.
Yeah, let's see.
But yeah, it went well. I was scared at first because it's a cataracts.
Yeah, that is scary. I would be really scared.
But it was a weird experience, and I got out. It says, hey, it might hurt, but it didn't hurt, so it went well.
Good, no, good. And, but you were saying you can't.
I got a lens in my eye that I can literally. It's like I can see better in this eye. Yeah. I can see the difference.
What kind of a lens that stays in there all the time?
Yeah.
Yeah. Not a contact thing.
It is a contact lens.
Oh, you have to take it out?
No.
Never.
It's inside.
Never take it out.
No.
Okay.
No.
So, yeah. So I'm glad that went well. But in case we give our listeners an unfair view of U.S. healthcare by being too positive, you were telling me also you're having a hard time seeing your primary care physician.
I don't have a primary care physician.
You don't even have
one.
It's
so hard again.
Yeah, there you go.
So what I've been doing is just, if I have a problem in my knee, I'll go and get that referral, go to the partner's clinic, urgent care, and then they do a referral.
And that costs money though, right? The urgent care thing?
$10 copayment versus if you go to emergency room, it's $150 copayment.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
So when I had asthma, when I went in one Monday before Christmas, I had asthma.
Yeah.
They took me down to the emergency room.
Yep.
It cost me $150. I said, just put it in the other bill that I'm still paying off.
Oh, God. So, I was going to give a little taste of the current state of U.S. medical care from direct personal experience, and I'll do it real quick. I have sleep apnea. The treatment for it is still very medieval. It's just basically get this machine that blows air into your mouth. Yeah, it's stupid. Because that's what sleep apnea is. It's your airwaves block up when you're sleeping and it wakes you up. And if you have it bad enough, you're constantly waking up at night, so you're always tired.
Yeah, yeah.
So I have a version of that. I sort of had it under control, or I thought I did for a while. And then it feels like it's worse, so I go to my doctor a while ago. Blah, blah, blah. The point of the story is they've got in this entire Atrius healthcare system, which used to be Harvard Pilgrim or still is, it's like now you have like the name of the insurance company, the name of the company that owns that, and blah, blah. You've got like three names now for where I used to, you know, have gone for healthcare simply because that's one of the two offered places at my workplace, Harvard University. Used to be four, and then they got rid of two. And now they're pushing us to go to the Harvard plan, Harvard University Group plan. And I refuse to do that. I don't want to give Harvard any more money, and I don't trust it. And I'd have to, like, you know, have to go to, you know, they would probably cover doctors in other areas, but they wouldn't have the centers of treatment that the place I go to now has. But having said that, and also people are like, my union leadership is unfortunately, again, it's always better to have a union than not have a union, but this one's testing my patience. They're like, oh yeah, you should go to, they're basically telling the members to go to this Harvard plan, which I think is a conflict of interest. Why would I as a union member ever tell someone go on the boss's, you know, their healthcare plan if there was a choice, you know? Anyway, So the point of the story, though, is that I got this sleep bag thing, and all I have to do is have someone show me how to use it, use the stupid thing. It takes probably 5 minutes. And supposedly, I had a 5 month wait for that. I still haven't had it done. I still haven't been able to see the person. Apparently, there's only one person that can do this. I said, well, I'll go to other centers. I don't have to go to the one I normally go to. I'll go to other centers in other towns. And they either didn't follow up on that, or they didn't. I heard two different things, like they did and they didn't. So that's another thing, is you get contradictory information from the same department a lot. So I have to wait till June something to get that done, which is insane, because it's like a simple thing. They could have 50 people doing
it. This was analyzed last year.
Yeah, so you had to wait a year. Yeah.
So now I'm getting, I got it.
Yeah.
Done, but it took a while.
So if you're listening from over, I thought you were done.
I even told them. Well, back, if I'm from Cuba, so I said, in Cuba, they get it done that same day. Oh, they got more doctors. You're right, they got more doctors.
Yeah.
You're right about that. I'm not arguing on that one. There's a reason for that, a dialectical, scientific reason for that.
Yeah. There was, all I was going to say was, sorry to interrupt, I was going to say that we have listeners from overseas, we found out various times over the course of this history of the show, that people have written in and stuff to Facebook and all that, which is great, and welcome overseas listeners from Canada, Mexico, Middle East, wherever, because with a computer you can listen from anywhere. Although we do actually go out over the airwaves here in a very limited Somerville, Medford, parts of the suburbs, parts of the city of Boston, slice of Boston, I'm not even sure about that.
Cambridge.
Limited, yeah, parts of Cambridge. It's a limited signal, 91.5 FM. By the way, just back up and give our legal identification, WMFO Medford or WMFO in Medford. And we're also known as 91.5 FM, Tufts Freeform Radio. Technically in Medford, we're kind of on the border of Somerville and Medford, by the way. And you can also listen, and this is why we have the international listeners, go to WMFO.org and go to the schedule and click on the show you want to listen to. And we're Socialist Radio. Actually, we're listed as Socialist Alternative Radio. We're trying to change our name to Socialist Radio and haven't quite got that done yet. I'm not sure how it works. I put in an appeal to do that, and it wasn't done, which I'm not blaming anyone, because we just went through a busy period here at the station. At the beginning of every semester, scheduling in new shows and all that. So this is, primarily student-run. It's totally student-run radio, primarily student-based radio, but like some of the college stations, they do allow some community members to participate, which is great, and we're part of that community participation. Again, Socialist Radio. We're here every other Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And today's show, by the way, just to back up a little bit, I should have said this initially, we're going to be talking about all sorts of stuff. Healthcare, we just started talking about. We always are a bit free-form ourselves with a talk
the here. Circus show that we've had.
What circus? What are you talking about?
State of the Union? Wasn't that a circus show?
Ah, did you watch it?
Oh, God.
I'm so glad, because I didn't.
I had nothing else to do.
I want
to
hear about it. No.
My mother was watching. She was like,
No, we have to hear about that. Because,
you haven't seen it?
Well, I'll get into that in a second. Let me just give the general topics today. We're going to talk about free public transit, a growing movement in the United States, believe it or not. Corporate welfare, unfortunately a well-established evil practice in the United States. And we're going to talk about it in one city in Worcester, Massachusetts, where I do some political work. And then climate strikes coming up. The 50th anniversary of Earth Day in the United States, April 22nd, is coming up this year. And then a lot about the elections, if we have time. Because if you're living in the U.S., or maybe even if you're not, the corporate media is very, very focused on making sure that you buy into, or trying to make sure you buy into the elections here. And I'd like to get into that from both a working class, but also just a scientific and a Marxist point of view, for example, and sociologists examine this stuff somewhat, but it's amazing how many people fall for it, including people on the left. I've lived through so many of these election cycles now that I see the same patterns emerge over and over again. And it's a dilemma, because until we have a workers' party in this country, a real left party, a real social democratic party, and there's all sorts of really good analysts, Marxists and non-Marxists, who still make the basic error of saying the Democratic Party is a social democratic party. It's completely not in its history, in its program, any way you want to look at it. Just because not every, or some other countries, not every issue, if it's progressive, is automatically a social democratic issue. If by that they mean the Democratic Party is reformist, the way social democratic parties became and are now, then you have to say, spell that out. You don't call it social democratic. It's still not. It's a reformist political party. Of course it is. It's a pro-capitalist political party. It's by definition, in terms of capitalism, reformist and light reformist at that. There's an article, I don't know if we'll have time to get to it, but you know, when Jesse Jackson, for example, ran for the presidency in 1988, he had a more radical program than Bernie Sanders. But they both made the fundamental error of running within the Democratic Party. That's why it's good to look at Jackson's candidacy, McGovern's candidacy, and others. There's been many left populists or progressive populists like Sanders who have done the same thing. And yet, people here treat it as a completely new phenomena. And I had someone say once at a meeting, believe it or not, a so-called socialist say, the past doesn't matter. We're in a new period. Can you imagine a Marxist ever saying the past doesn't matter? Where does the present come
that's
from?
That's like Thatcher saying history is that's it. Soviet Union fell.
Yeah,
the end of
that
history.
Guy Fukuyama with the end of history. It's the end of history argument. And it's insane.
So here we are today.
We're in
still.
A new period. We're always in a new period. Tomorrow we're in a new period. The next day, the next election will be in a new period. But is it fundamental? What kind of new period? Is it fundamentally new in all aspects? Or are some things new and some things very much the same or very similar? And of course, with the Democratic Party, in terms of the measuring its how it operates, showing how it operates, explaining how it operates, understanding how it operates, it is not fundamentally different than the Democratic Party when Jesse Jackson ran and when others ran. There are some differences. There's more people of color in the Democratic Party, that's for sure. But if you look at some of the rules and regulation of the Democratic Party, it's even more tightly controlled than it was at certain other times. Other times it was also tightly controlled, very backroom, cigar-filled backroom cliche of machine party politics. That still exists, but in a different form. They don't smoke the cigars anymore, but the DNC is certainly a backroom thing.
Sure about
thing.
That?
Yeah.
They messed up on the count. They were probably smoking something else.
There's a lot of ways to, mechanically stop someone from getting the nomination. Look at Henry Wallace in 1944 when he was running, not as president, he ran for president later in 48. But in 44, he ran, he had been FDR's vice president, and he ran to, expected to continue as vice president. He was considered, again, making the same mistake they make now by the Communist Party at the time, by labor leaders at the time, most of them.
It's socialist.
That he was, that Wallace represented some sort of left alternative, left in quotes. He wasn't left at all, but he was progressive, and he did somewhat progressive, relatively speaking, including in terms of relationships with the Soviet Union, which is why the Communist Party was so interested in him staying vice president. The Communist Party at that time was a mass organization, by the way, although it was starting to shrink.
So we would have had a better relationship with the Soviet Union had he not?
No. It's irrelevant. One individual. There was much bigger things happening. But he was known as being friendlier to the Soviet Union. And by that time, which a lot of people don't realize, the whole idea of socialist revolution in any real sense was long gone from the Communist Party leadership in the United States and around the world. And Stalinism had redefined so-called communism and so-called socialism as just, let's get the best deal for the Soviet Union where there is real existing socialism, quote unquote, which there wasn't. That's a longer discussion, but basically they were supporting Wallace like they did all over the world, different treaties and different individuals to get what they thought would be the best deal for them. But Wallace also had, because of the influence of the Communist Party in the labor movement at the time, a lot of labor support. So they show up to the Democratic Party convention in 1944, I think it was, might have been 43, late 43 or whatever, and they showed up and they were all, everyone thought Wallace was going to get it. There was a hardcore of liberals who didn't share his, they were trying to retool the Democratic Party to be more hostile to the Russians than it had been, because during the war so far, there had been this alliance, shaky alliance militarily and so on with the United States. And they liked aspects of the Roosevelt administration, also a mistake if you look at it more broadly. But Wallace, just through pure cheating and doing weird things at the convention, despite the majority of delegates being for him there. He lost. He wasn't vice president anymore. They gave him some, under Truman, they gave him some post somewhere. I forget what it was. But he was no longer vice president. Even though everyone thought, well, he'll just slide in like he has for three times and the majority support him. No. Just one little example. The DNC, you know, there was a lawsuit against the Democratic National, well, DNC, Democratic, what's
National Committee.
Is that National Committee? Is that right?
I think so.
I'm not sure. Democratic National Committee. Maybe. Okay. Anyway, DNC, everyone uses the abbreviation so much that that's how I think of it. It's the corporation, literally, that runs the Democratic Party behind the scenes. There's no democracy in the Democratic Party in terms of how it runs, really. And they control a lot of money, a lot of influence, a lot of media contacts, you name it. Obviously, a lot of fundraising, and ultimately, they are, because you could have sitting office holders or previous office holders as part of that, or obviously influencing the DNC. And there was a suit brought about things that had people that thought Sanders got ripped off in the last convention. I'm not sure what it was based on. I don't remember exactly. And they lost the suit. And the court said the DNC, the Democratic Party, is run by this corporation and they can do what they want. They can choose who they want. So ultimately, it's highly unlikely Sanders would win the nomination unless the DNC could figure out, unless they're very confident they can use him, as they already have. He's already been used by the Democratic Party, or uses the Democratic Party. It's a mutual assured destruction type relationship in terms of any kind of real change. And we've talked about that on the show before. Sanders' long history of the Democratic Party, a lot of people don't know about. But they can do just about anything. They can just sort of say, we don't want Sanders at the end of the day, and they could win that, you know? So it's highly unlikely he's going to win the nomination, despite doing well in the first primary or caucus thing, and in Iowa, and now he's probably going to do well in New Hampshire. Despite that, there's a million ways, according to perfectly legal ways, to get rid of him as the Democratic Party nominee. Now, would that be popular or show a positive light on the Democratic Party? No. So they're going to try to get rid of him in other ways. I mean, there's already a lot of discussion about how there's people that are putting on a progressive veneer in the Democratic Party race to dilute Sanders' vote. You've got a lot of people that go in there claiming to be progressive of some sort.
Yeah, like Tom.
Yeah, well, exactly. The billionaire. The billionaire. Bloomberg.
And he says, and Trump says, we're socialists, but...
Bloomberg, hold that thought, by the way, because we got to talk about the State of the Union address.
So this is what I mean. All week I've been watching circus show on both sides.
I know.
And then what's this bimbo there, with his State of the Union and his acquittal, and it's like, oh my God.
Yeah. Well, the thing with... I lost my train of thought with the Democratic Party thing, but just to finish that up, that there's just a lot of ways to get rid of Sanders, some more popular, some more workable than others, or more better for PR than others. And one of them that goes unnoticed somewhat, all the people have been writing about it, is, look at this, look how many people are anointed by the DNC this time. It's more than usual. There's always a lot of people running.
Duvall's in there.
A lot, but a certain number. Yeah, right, exactly. But it includes, and this is the point I wanted to riff on for a second, who would call themselves a left-winger? And by the way, the New York Times front page last week did describe Sanders as a liberal. Said Sanders is a liberal and the others are moderates. And that's what I've been fighting for. For once, the New York Times and myself are in agreement.
Really? New York Times is agreeing with the crimes?
I'm agreeing with one word they used, the liberal word, the word liberal to describe Sanders, because that's what he is. He's a liberal. He's not a socialist. And they had it in the right order, too. They said liberal Sanders and then moderates like Biden and so on. These people are all even Sanders, within the realm of the Democratic Party historically, which was one of the original points earlier, that there's been a whole history of progressive populism, left populism in the Democratic Party. Sanders is not a new phenomenon. Sanders himself makes the same mistake when he's like, today I saw a thing on the news. Donald Trump is the, what is it? What was the exact word he used? Anyway, he said the equivalent of worst president in U.S. history, most scary, most horrible, most, fill in the blank. Like it's a new, you know, the most. Like, there's never been another one like Trump.
Yeah.
I mean, what the hell? No, most dangerous. Mm-hmm. Most dangerous. There it is, dangerous. Okay, hold the thought for 1 second. So who is the most dangerous president in U.S. history? Let's think about that. Now, I would say you could argue Harry Truman, because he dropped the atomic bomb twice on civilians.
LBJ.
Well, hold on, thought. You're going to like this one. JFK.
Of course.
He almost started a nuclear war over Cuba.
Pigs,
yeah,
man.
Yeah. And then LBJ, like you say, escalated the Vietnam War terribly, right? LBJ, like you said. So you want to talk about who's the most dangerous president in
Ronald
history?
Ronald Reagan.
You know, Reagan. Reagan rattled that saber.
Ray gun.
Yep. You could. I mean, we have to think about it a little more. But would Trump be number one? No. Trump, fortunately, and that's not because we are apologizing at all for Trump. We hate Trump more than any liberal out there. And Trump is going to round us up first if things go bad.
Obama.
I don't know if Obama was one of the most dangerous, but I'm talking about danger, dangerous. That's the term he used.
He destroyed Libya.
That's true. That's true. And also the big bailout really hurt a lot of people. But I don't know. You have to think about it more. But, you know, World War One, Woodrow Wilson. Whoa, that's danger. He was a Democrat. That's big danger. That was a bloody, bloody, bloody war. No reason for the U.S. to be involved in it at all. World War I was not World War II, by the way. Read the history. But what was the thing you mentioned besides the State of the Union address?
The circus show.
No, but before that. Anyway, well, whatever. Let's talk about that for a second.
Oh, I mentioned Iowa, you know, with the miscounts.
Yeah. Well, that was the riff about there's a lot of ways to do that stuff, and that was one of them probably. That bought them some time to, like, switch around some things. So, you know, the bottom line was, right, of Iowa was Buttigieg, or however you say his name, Buttigieg. He won the popular vote. So I didn't know there was like a popular vote thing going on in those things too. But it makes sense because they do delegates, you know, rather than, it doesn't make sense. I mean, it's wrong. Popular, you know, again, in the presidential election, a plague on both of them, but Hillary Clinton versus Trumpo, neither won a choice for workers and youth. You remember Clinton won the popular vote and lost the electoral vote, and Trump was sitting in office, and all the liberals, literally the next day, they really got behind that. That electoral vote's what matters. That's really what matters. You know, I mean, it was reminding me of 2000 election when Gore and the Democratic Party, rather than risk instability into the system, they caved right away on the machinations down in Florida, right? The crazy vote. Florida's always a nest of corruption. And the government I'm talking about, and the corporations down there. And so they, you know, there's all those problems with the election. You remember any of that stuff? 2000 election?
2000, yeah. I voted for Nader.
So did I. Oh, yeah, definitely. A lot of people did.
But, yeah, that was the whole point of actually seeing Al Gore come up and not fight for, you know, what was literally him being elected, really.
Yeah.
Threw in the towel, just like Sanders.
Threw in the towel and defended it. You know, said, hey, this is the way it has to
delegates,
go.
Delegates. And it came out on one of the, I think, Love Story by Michael Moore,
mm-hmm.
where all these delegates from the Democratic Party was getting up, protesting. He would literally have them, and they were protesting for him. And he was literally dismissed, you know?
Remember Michael Moore from the 90s? Whole totally different guy from the Michael Moore of now.
Yeah.
Michael Moore now is just a shrill mouthpiece for the Democratic Party, and it's really disgusting. He's so into lesser evilism. He's so into demonizing Trump I don't even know what to call it. It's like the people that call Trump a fascist. Well, maybe deep in his heart, he's a fascist. Maybe he'll become a fascist, but there's no way. You don't understand fascism when you think Trump's a fascist.
Yeah.
Because if Trump was a fascist, we couldn't do the radio show we're doing. If Trump was a fascist, there would be a mass movement of right-wingers out on the street, not just in Charlottesville, but in a lot of places.
He said, America has defeated the fascists. Bah, bah, mm-hmm. bah, bah,
yeah.
bah.
Well, okay, State of the Union. I was waiting for the C word.
I'm like, well, go ahead. Say it. Communist. You know, he didn't dare say
But he
it.
Said socialism 8 times, I read. I didn't watch it, but I read about it.
State of the Union? I must have got it late.
State of the Union, I read, he said socialism 8 times, and he introduced Guaido, that scumbag He might be a fascist for real. I have to read more about him. He's a right winger either way. That scumbag Guaido from Venezuela is introduced by Trump, paraded around the next day by Pelosi, by the way, and the Democratic Party. So what so-called socialist would support a political party, going back to an earlier point, that has billionaires in it running for the prime, running to be the leader of the party in the sense of winner of the primary and presidential candidate. Who, you know, you got Bloomberg and this other guy, we can't remember his last name.
Tom Steroids.
They're both billionaires. You know, I can't even imagine a working person voting for a billionaire, much less.
His head is like, I have practical business solutions. I'm like, what?
More capitalism. They're all, by the way, billionaires or millionaires, including Sanders.
It's in an economy if you want to defeat Trump. That's it. I was like, okay.
Yeah, sounds great. Ad. Yeah, what are the details there? But anyway, fixing the economy for the rich. And by the way, Trump, you got
Obama's behind Bloomberg in the ads.
No.
So now you got Obama saying, when I was in office, I worked with Bloomberg and, you know, blah, blah, passed any gun laws.
That could just be a quote, though. It might not be an endorsement.
Quote, but you still have him in the ads.
You still have the evidence that he supported Bloomberg,
So he's definitely the Obama.
Well, remember, Bloomberg was Republican for a while, then he became Democrat, and which happens a lot, by the way. So you think the two parties are so separate. Look at how many crossovers and then he did the stop and frisk mass incarceration deal in New York, which the bourgeois loved, including Obama. You know, they really like that stuff, believe it or not. No matter what they say, they love it. And because, you know, it brings order to the places they want to have dinner and all that. Mm-hmm. But then you have right now you've got the billionaires, the two billionaires at least running, and the rest are millionaires, including Sanders. And you're going to call this some sort of social democratic party. You're going to call this some sort of opposition party, some sort of thing that working people should vote for. You know, people are losing it. They lost it when Trump got elected. What I'm talking about is people on the left that should know better. They're losing it over Trump. They're losing it over Sanders. And no amount of facts dissuade some of them. They just want to, some of them know better, but they want to ride the wave. They think, if I pretend to like Sanders, I really do like Sanders because I'm an idiot as a leftist, then I'm going to, ingratiate myself with all these people that are becoming interested in socialism through Sanders. Well, you don't have to do that. You don't have to lie to people. You can just go up to them quite honestly and say, Sanders is bringing up some good issues. Other people have brought them up before, by the way. There's problems with some of the issues he raises, by the way, in terms of like his support for a lot of military spending, including the F-35 in Vermont. That's where people might turn off, but if they're honest, they'll listen to you. And also, there's problems with Medicare for All in that Medicare is not that great, first of all. But secondly, even enhanced Medicare for All, he wants to pay for it through more taxes on working people. And you don't have to tax working people one penny more because we're already taxed to death.
Yeah.
You tax the super rich, the big corporations, and you cut military spending. You got more than enough money, not just for healthcare for all.
You nationalize healthcare.
Yeah. Hear what Biden says?
If we ever said that, if I was a candidate and I said, I want to nationalize on the labor ticket.
Well, that is the equivalent of nationalization. Healthcare. It's not using the word, but it's the equivalent.
They would flip. I think I would be assassinated.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but Medicare for All is the equivalent of nationalization.
Okay.
But you're right. If you use the word, they could get at you more. But unfortunately, Sanders has given them an Achilles heel, which is the taxing the working class part. That goes a lot. Believe me, I have a long history in independent socialist left politics, but I also, you know, like, not like a lot of people, like, I'm not saying I'm the only person that does this, but like a lot of people, I pay a lot of attention to the politics of my class enemies, the Democrats and the Republicans, a lot of attention.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you in local issues, regional issues, and national issues, how many times the tax the working class thing is used by Republicans, but also Democrats, if they're fighting each other, usually. To scare people. And it works because people are scared. There's people out there, they're one bill away from losing their homes. If you don't pay a water bill or a property tax bill, and you actually own your own home or your own condo or whatever, you can't pay that stuff. You get evicted. you know, at a certain point. You can't pay your mortgage because you put money into paying those other bills. You get evicted. You know, it's a very real thing. Increased taxation is not, the rich liberals think, oh, you can squeeze out a few more dollars. What's your problem? No, we're in debt, man. We're already deep in debt. You know, and they're finally coming out with all these new statistics about how deep in debt workers are in the United States, by the way. Deep, deep debt. So you get the liberals come on TV. They're making big bucks, a lot of them. And they're like, what's the problem with taxation? What's the big problem? It's a complete, you know, Sanders wants to be in touch, a man of the people. Then he should learn, don't touch that. You don't raise our taxes anymore. We're taxed to death. The whole, and he'll even say this in a speech, I would imagine. I haven't heard it yet. I've heard a lot of his speeches, but the whole tax thing has been flipped in this country, you know? It used to be skewed towards the big corporations and the rich, and now it's skewed most tax revenues coming from working people.
What was that statistics a couple proportionally. That we had? Remember a couple shows ago you were given...
Yeah,
the percentages, very minor percentages of these companies like Facebook or Google, you know, mm-hmm. which is hardly nothing.
I know. Yep.
You know,
sometimes nothing.
If they started sometimes less taxed than, at 25%, yeah. How much money?
Yep.
And I say it go further.
Okay? Exactly.
Go further than that, 50%, yeah. Half, right down the.
I agree. And right since, and then sometimes they're not even. Not only they're not paying taxes, they're getting corporate welfare, meaning they're getting government subsidies to do their or city or state subsidies to do their business, their nastiness. You know, there's like when Amazon wanted to come to New York City, and initially they were stopped. I think they still got around it somehow or setting something up there. But the initial thing was based, they were going to give them a big business. Like the mayor of Boston, who I heard a so-called socialist say was progressive, you know, gave all that money to GE to come here and set up headquarters. And all the promises about number of jobs and everything have been just don't exist. They were tossed out the window immediately. That always happens. Always happens. But what was the point? State of the Union. So here's what I heard. 8 times he said socialism. And then when he mentioned Guaido and introduced Guaido, both Democrats and Republicans gave him a standing ovation. Now, I don't know. Did Sanders stand and give him a standing ovation? Because Sanders has said stuff like Maduro.
I don't think Sanders was there.
Sanders wasn't there? Okay, fine. How about AOC? How about the other ones? Were they there? I don't think AOC was there either.
Nancy was there.
Of course. Pelosi, yeah. Pelosi. Pelosi gave her
gave a stand. She gave the hand.
But I don't care about that. I don't care. What I care about is Pelosi gave a stand-up ovation, standing ovation for this Guaido, this severe right-winger, maybe fascist, that wants to... you know, be a CIA tool, is a CIA tool to go down and depose the government in Venezuela, who, you know, we don't have total agreement with or anything, but, you know, the people
the
want something in Venezuela. It's not what the media says here. The regime is still has some popularity because they remember Chavez. They see it as kind of a continuation or an attempt to continue Chavez's policies. And whether it's not in some ways, but they'd rather see that than U.S. imperialism come down and decide who's going to be their ruler. We're out of power. Oh, here
hello.
We go.
Okay,
hello.
What was
yeah,
that?
Okay, so we're pissing somebody off, but anyway.
Listen, shut up now.
In case you want to, we're not going to let that stop us.
Mic check. Okay.
No, you're fine. You're fine. I was just going to say that, or in case you missed that last point, that the point isn't so much Pelosi not, and I'm not saying that you're defending this point, I'm just saying
yeah.
That got a lot of press, not shaking Trump's hand and ripping up the thing. That
circus,
got a lot of press.
Circus show.
But the thing that should have gotten a lot of focus from all these so-called progressives and so-called leftists that are supporting Sanders and the Democratic Party is that, wait a minute, there was a bipartisan standing ovation for Guaido, or Guaido, or however you say his name.
Guaido. Say
Guaido. Where's the I, though? There's no I, is there?
Guaido.
The U?
Guaido. Guaido.
It's Guaido? Okay. There is an I. Okay.
Guaido.
I hear you. Yeah, so that was most disgusting. And then, of course, didn't Trump say something like, I'll never let socialism destroy our healthcare in America, or something like that? You didn't hear that?
So I got in late.
I probably screwed up the quote.
My mother was watching
it,
and I got in a little late, so I only got caught about maybe an hour of it or 45 minutes of it.
Yeah. Well, that's what
and
we...
And then Bimbo, Rush Limb Bimbo.
Oh, he got the freedom of...
Got a little reward. He started crying. Yeah. It was a circus show.
Well, Limbo, Rush Limbaugh, is a scumbag, total scumbag, total right winger, idiot. He's really an idiot. I remember one. I remember when he was actually his height of popularity was I think more in the 90s. And there was a point where I started, when I was home, I'd come home to visit my parents, and over the course of about a year and a half, every time I came home to visit, they were listening. No, listening to radio.
Well, he had a show. He had a radio. TV show.
I don't know. They didn't watch the TV show. So, and I would sit there and argue with them and, you know, a little bit, much as we could stand. And the guy was a complete moron, you know, and is. But I don't have any respect for the Freedom Medal anyway, you know, because... That's the capitalist government giving it to people. You know, Rosa Parks should have refused it, in my opinion. So I'm not surprised to see Limbaugh get that at all. But, you know, it's not the stuff that the media focused on so much that bothers me about the State of the Union and all that, which shouldn't even exist, that whole institution, really. We need collective leadership, not one pseudo-king, you know, running the show. But, and I'm not saying it's that simple, but there's elements of that. But, you know, it's all this, like, you know, no one challenging his use of the word socialism and the way he talks about that. I haven't heard anyone challenge that. You know, that the Democrats who people are calling socialist, including Trump, stand up and applaud. You know, they're obviously not socialists. There, as Pelosi said, we're capitalists. You know, that's just the way it is. And historically, that's exactly the way it is, including now, you know. But there's this really level of disconnect in the U.S. now. If you're a socialist in another country, a real socialist, and you came here right now and you saw people supporting Sanders, who claim to be socialists, and he's in your country would be kind of conservative, you know, in terms of the political spectrum, you'd be like, what's going on? You're supporting the Democratic Party and. I mean, I talked to a guy from Chile one time.
Oh, me too, at work.
And he said...
"The people like him is going to make socialism not attractive."
I know. He's right.
And I said, I had to applaud to him. I said, I agree with you
100%. Yeah, I agree too.
From somebody from outside looking in going, no, Allende's was way more progressive than this guy.
Definitely.
Nobody.
And Allende had his problems, but Allende was more progressive.
Yeah. You know, he got killed for it.
There was... I spoke to a Chilean guy in 2016, and he... He was like, he saw other socialists supporting Sanders' Democratic Party. He was like, because he was speaking like sort of broken English. He goes, but imperialism. And I'm like, I understood exactly what he meant. I go, yeah, you're right. But imperialism. Sanders has had a string of votes that have been pro-imperialist. And not always, but enough, more than enough. There shouldn't be one. You know, you notice he doesn't focus on any of that. You know, he's focusing, on issues that are important, I think, for the most part, important to working class people. That's where he's getting his support from. But that's not enough because he has no solutions on those issues or solutions don't work. But tied into those economic things that he keeps talking about is U.S. imperialism, is military. And I'm not saying he's to make a speech about U.S. imperialism, he's giving a speech about military spending. And he has. He's actually... come out for cutting military spending, but doesn't fit his way of thinking and his votes and the way he usually doesn't talk about that stuff. So going back to the example of Venezuela, he's made statements that support, you know, basically Trump's policies and Republicans' policies and Democrats as well towards Venezuela. Now, at other times he said, he said something about like, no, we shouldn't be involved in their affairs or something like that, like a sort of milquetoast objection. But then he also said Maduro, Chavez was a dead communist dictator and said things about Maduro being a dictator, the Venezuelan dictator. And it's not. They had plenty of elections, more elections than we have here. And anyway, we are... good. We haven't used that much time. We want to switch gears for a minute away from the elections because that's another thing is that if you want to know to understand the power of the corporate media and why it's such an enemy of the people... is that, they want to focus on the elections, it's focused on the elections. Hey, they want to focus on individual personalities rather than what the parties stand for for real. You'll see a lot of that, you know. You'll see some looks at issues at a very superficial level. You'll see sometimes they'll talk about what the person is promoting at a given moment. But even with Sanders, that can be very vague. Sanders is doing a lot of anti-Trump stuff lately. I'm the person that can win against Trump, you know, and sometimes that's linked to issues, sometimes it's not. But every bourgeois or capitalist class controlled election that I've been through in the United States, which is all of them that since I was born, they focus inordinately, almost exclusively, on personalities, individuals. This is a good individual who will be a good leader. You know, and think about that. Again, we're not a royalty. It's not supposed to be one individual running the show. They talk about Trump and the economy, or Obama and the economy. Both crazy. One person doesn't make the economy affect it that much, because Trump, as much as he seems like a loose cannon, he's not going to make these moves economically without approval from a certain level of business leaders and Republican Party people, and even certain Democrats in certain cases. So Trump was going to go in. One of his things was it wasn't the tariff stuff, which he's gone back and forth on. It was something else. What was it? Oh, I can't remember. It was popped into my mind and popped out. But I'll give you a different example from a slight
trade
different
deal angle. With
No. I was going to mention that next, but it was something else that he wanted to do and never did. And it wasn't a bait and switch type thing of pretending to be progressive or something. It was a thing where it was a right wing thing that he just didn't follow through on because the right wingers didn't like it ultimately. I can't remember the example, but anyway, there's plenty of examples. But that's a good point. The new NAFTA thing. Now, back in the 90s, NAFTA was a hated policy and caused people that had supported the Democratic Party to abandon the Democratic Party, rightly so. And there was an attempt to form a labor party in the 90s that we were involved in, you know? And it never came to fruition, because even then, the labor leaders that supported it, most of them had one foot in the Democratic Party and weren't willing to take that step to run candidates. So against the Democrats in certain areas at all. They didn't run one candidacy until really, really late, a little one in South Carolina, way after the party had collapsed, really, for all intents and purposes, the attempt to form a labor party. So they didn't run candidates. They ultimately did lesser evilism, is what I'm trying to say. They were afraid to break with that. There was one or two leaders that had positioned the labor movement, also in the labor party, that wanted to break with that. There's a lot of rank and file labor party people that wanted to break with that, obviously. But the labor leaders messed that up really bad. And the point was that what was the point? I keep losing my thread here today. There was what were we talking about just before that? NAFTA. So they did the NAFTA thing, right? And that propelled people into all sorts of opposition to the Democratic Party, including examining third-party options, start getting one going and so on. And again, by the 2000 election, it had not gone. It had died because they refused to run candidates, and the AFL-CIO leadership choked it out to a certain extent.
That's why Nader was the alternative.
Yeah,
third.
And they went after Nader like you wouldn't believe. You know, Nader was all the liberals went after Nader, just foaming in the mouth. A lot of liberals think the Democratic Party owns your vote. They own you, and you just must do what they come up with at the end of the day. And then they will justify that by buying into the lies or spreading the lies, even if they know better about democracy and the Democrats and all that, not really showing where the money comes from and that what we were talking about earlier, the DNC controls things and all that. But basically, NAFTA went through this time with not much of a peep, right? They put Trump said he was going to make improvements to it, blah, blah. It's a horrible thing. NAFTA 2 is just as horrible as NAFTA 1. But the labor leaders are even more in bed with the Democrats now than they were at that time. I mean, they were in bed with the Democrats, but NAFTA shook them out of it, you know, for a short time. Some of them out of it, some of the more progressive ones. Now they're back, like, you know, lesser evilist mode completely. In fact, you have a lot of unions, or some unions, endorsing Biden already, you know. And now that sounds like I'm saying I'm buying into the Biden versus Sanders paradigm, and I'm not. You know, unions endorsing Sanders doesn't get me any more excited than unions endorsing Biden. If Sanders tomorrow left the Democratic Party, I'd get excited about a union endorsement of Sanders and hope that he would help to build a workers' party. And I would support Sanders. We would support Sanders, most likely, depending on his program and what he was doing it for. But right now, it's all Democratic Party all the time for the labor leaders. And that's a stab in the back to workers. And it's also just going to help you know, make the future more precarious for unions. In fact, despite all those really good strikes that have happened recently with the teachers union and so on.
In West Virginia?
West Virginia being the most well-known and the best of them all. And other strikes that happened, GM strike and all that. The latest statistics from 2018 or 19, I think 19, on union density, meaning number of how many workers do unions cover, what percentage, that hasn't really gone up. Stayed kind of, went down a little bit. It's kind of flat again, you know. So the reason is that you can't ignore electoral politics. Some people, some leftists, make the mistake of it's so bad. They understand. Unlike others on the left, they understand the Democratic Party is a party of big business. You can't support a candidate of the Democratic Party because that means you're supporting the party of big business. That's how everyone supports the Democratic Party. They support a candidate or two or three or whatever. So it's supporting the Democratic Party. Even Sanders or whoever you want to throw in there from the history books, Jesse Jackson, whatever. You're supporting the Democratic Party if you support that candidate. So the alternative is not out there yet, obvious. That's the dilemma I referred to earlier and didn't fully explain. And some people are not going to consider voting, and even then they might not, but they won't consider voting for a third party unless it's totally full-blown up and running, not understanding how you could help organize one. And step one is to not give a mandate to your class enemy, the Democratic Party, right, and the Republican Party. But, until Sanders or whoever, you know, when I say a union is no better endorsing Sanders than endorsing Biden, I mean that because they're basically endorsing the Democratic Party, you know. And the most likely scenario is going to go down is Sanders is going to do what he did last time and endorse whoever the nominee is if it's not him. By the way, Bloomberg said he would endorse Sanders, right?
Whoa, rewind, what?
Bloomberg said if Sanders won the primary, he would endorse him. And I don't think that's total crazy because I think he's probably lying about that.
And that's when you definitely are like, whoa. Billions in your coffers, on your
right,
coffer?
Right, right.
No.
Well, I think he might be telling the truth if they can figure out a way to be more sure of Sanders. You know, I mean, you know, to say that Sanders has served the Democratic Party well is an understatement. He's done a lot of good stuff for the Democratic Party. Even when he declared himself independent, he was working with them, blocking with them. That's since 1992, even a little bit before that. Like, he endorsed Mondale, for example, in 84. But Sanders still is putting forward these demands, some of the which the Democratic Party does not like. You know, the DNC, I'm talking about the core of the Democratic Party, the majority, they don't like those demands. And if Sanders keeps going with those demands and they feel like they can't sort of find ways to be sure he's not going to try for some of that stuff, like a lot of them don't believe in universal health care. Sanders' argument is, which is correct, is all these other countries have it. It's not a radical thing. At this point, universal health care could be a liberal thing. It could be it will take in this country a movement beyond liberalism to win it, but and to certainly make sure it's funded. But to actually get it in initially, you could get in some messed up plan, you know, even based on capitalism. And so it's not ruled out. I mean, well, I'm sorry. What Sanders says is not, he says it's not radical. He said this last night in New Hampshire. It's not radical. It's all these other countries have it. He's right about that. But you still have the majority of the Democratic Party rulers, politicians, you know, the higher ups. They don't want it. They don't want it, right? So this is a dilemma. It's a problem. If Sanders is still pushing for that in a real way, if they feel real, by the end of the primaries, they won't be comfortable with Sanders. And they're gonna try to do something to stop him. Does that mean he's like a socialist for real? No. Does that mean he's some sort of existential threat to the Democratic Party? No. Could he split the Democratic Party? There's no such thing as splitting the Democratic Party. There's no membership. What he could do is if he broke with the Democratic Party, which he should, then he could pull away Democratic Party voters, a certain number. Some would still vote, you know, lesser evilism and stay with the Democratic Party, but others could go with Sanders. That would be a good thing. That would be something we could, that would make the chance of getting real changes, even under capitalism, like healthcare, more likely and in a healthier way than if he stays in the Democratic Party.
And housing.
Well, we could come up with a list. I don't know. It's hard to say. You're right. I agree with you.
I think the housing situation, yeah. I was just looking at this form that my mother has. She gets assistance because of her age,
mm-hmm.
and she only pays $197.
Mm-hmm.
You know how much the rent is? She has to always, every year.
$1,500?
$1,500?
$2,000?
Close.
Oh, my God.
$1,858 for one bedroom and a... Because I was there for a couple days after my operation, so I have, you know, somebody there with me. So I was at her house, and she has this bathroom that's like literally like, oh my God, this is, there's no room here. And this is $1,858 a month.
Jeez. It's ridiculous. You know? It's a crime against humanity, really. And I might agree with you. Maybe
some
housing and healthcare are the two.
Because
shelter, right?
Like, huh?
Shelter is like, you need it, right? So that's like, that's related to health. So yeah, maybe if you had to list which ones are the most important.
Her, I was saying, I only make $2,000 with everything, all the stuff that they take away from me, all the bad, whatever.
Right, right. Taxes.
The healthcare.
Deductions for benefits. Deductions. Yep.
$500 in my pocket times four, that's $2,000.
Right.
How am I gonna pay my bills or food?
You're not.
I'm just pretty much just working for shelter.
And you can't. You have to eat too.
Here I am.
You gotta eat too.
Here's another anecdote. I'm worth last fiscal year $42,917.88.
And that.
But I only in my income tax.
Yep.
What I'm really worth is $33,000.
Right. That's what we talk about: gross pay versus net pay. Yep.
Because I got denied this fuel assistance because I make too much.
Exactly. That was the point I was going to make.
But here. Wait a minute. Here's an appeal. So I'm going to appeal on the grounds of, wait a minute. This is because when I do my income tax, they'll get that information, and I'm going to appeal and say, listen, I'm worth $42,900, almost $43,000, but I only got $33,000.
Right.
More or less.
Right.
$33,000.
Yep.
Okay. I'm still under that $35,000. Oh, no, but we don't consider. No, no.
They won't. That's what they're going to say, unfortunately. They're going to say it's gross pay.
So that's my appeal.
I'm the same way. I lose.
And we'll see what happens.
I lose $10,000 to $15,000 between gross and net pay due to taxes, deductions for benefits, all that kind of stuff. Yep.
So $15 an hour?
No,
I'm making about
enough.
$17,000 an hour, and I'm still struggling.
Oh, totally. That's what I was going to say, though.
The only reason I live where I live is because the landlord keeps my rent at it, you know, because I've been there for so long, and he's not an eye-gouging landlord. I'm not defending landlords, but this one right here is very what we call strange nowadays.
The $42,000salary per year, unfortunately, is by national standards, higher than a lot of people get. It's not. I don't know. I can't put the exact percentage of where it's at. But like you're saying, it's too low, and that's how the whole thing is skewed in this country for social benefits. What little there are, is they create such low income thresholds and other things that you know, assets, income, that sort of thing, to qualify. It's so freaking low.
Well,
it's ridiculous.
Social Security. My mother was like, oh, they gave me $11? Well, they deducted $5, $6 out of my food stamps because I made $11 more.
Right. There you go.
You know, instead of leaving it alone.
Go. Yep.
So, yeah, I'm gaining here, but I'm losing here.
There
happens
to a lot of workers.
It's like an equal, you know,
a lot of
them.
Workers like that. And also, you notice a lot of statistics about income are household income, and they don't even say that a lot of the time. They say the average American makes... or whatever, and it's complete lie in a way, because they're really, the next figure you're going to see is household income, meaning more than one income combined, usually, you know, maybe even three incomes combined or something, and it's just so misleading, you know. So anything else about the State of the Union, which for working people sucks?
No, it sucked.
Yeah,
it's like.
We're going to take a break in a minute, but let's start this discussion, if you don't mind, on free transit, as we promised. I'm not sure if I can call it a movement, but there are more and more places in the United States and internationally where cities are saying, okay, let's try completely free transit. Or they have some sort of formulas that give it partial, some of it's free, like on weekends or whatever. Some of it's not. Even here in this area, which is of the greater Boston area in Massachusetts, United States, there's a lot of the prices for the subway system and for the bus system are just way too high. They're incredibly high. And
it's unreliable.
And it keeps getting more. Yeah, well, let's leave that aside for a second. It keeps getting higher. And the even here, they had this thing with commuter rail, which they contract out to a private company, which is really stupid, real waste of money. The commuter rail lowered its prices 1 week into $10 a ticket, which still seems like a lot to me, given what they do. Yeah, on the weekend. Yeah. And they got all of a sudden a huge increase in ridership. Oh, no kidding.
Here's the catch. They don't run frequently.
Oh, I know. But so, what I'm saying, you're right. You're absolutely right. And we should get into that. But what I was going to say was initially that there's all these cities around the world that are experimenting with free or parts of their system being free. And I can't remember reading about any of them that exist that it's been seen as a negative. So Portland, for example, Oregon, which is probably the biggest city I have in mind about this, maybe they seem to be transitioning to free bus service. I don't know if they have light rail or not, but it might include like tram or light rail. Tram, by the way, is another word for light rail, as far as I understand it. But Kansas City, Missouri, same way. They've already done it. My understanding is free bus, free light rail, and this is a really important thing for working people because transportation is huge. And like here in the Boston area, the roads are absolutely completely clogged, and they could unclog them with various construction, but they don't want to do anything. They don't want to spend any money. They being the corporate government we have here, the government, state government run by the corporations and the Democrats, basically. But they, there's, just traffic is just insane. We don't get, we've complained about it on the air before. It's just, you know, you really literally, sometimes you get to in half an hour, can take an hour and a half, two, whatever. So if there were more public transit, like you were starting into, Diego, if there were more public transit options, more people would take it. I mean, I've looked at it. I thought when I moved out of the city to a smaller town outside of Boston, I thought I was going, or a smaller city, much smaller, I thought I was going to be commuting. Right, but I found out real quick the commuter rail is really, really expensive, and I can't afford it. Driving is so much cheaper, even with all the hassle. It's so much cheaper, and lack of times. I couldn't work my kids' schedules into that at all. I know. And when I did take commuter rail one time just to test it out, two times actually, I didn't see any kids on it. So if you have kids, you just know commuter rail isn't going to work. You know, if you have to go between cities or whatever, but within the cities. Bus and all that doesn't work either well for kids, and so you don't see them on. You do see them on the subway, inner city, and bus inner city, but it's always, you know, it's not really working well, you know, and the buses that the schools contract aren't working well. So transportation is a nightmare. So you need
and
more.
And it sucks when you have a lot of not in service buses just running around. I'm like, there's more not in service than there is service.
Right. So you need a huge upgrade in the quality of public transit. You need expanded, all that kind of stuff, right? But you need it free. That's what's really going to increase the ridership. And that would also lead to expansion because you'd have more ridership, more expansion, so on. And they cost these things out, and it's not that much money, really, because they're spending all this money on fare collection. So, and I'm not talking about laying people off to do fare collection. They would have to have full jobs, job training, full salary, full benefits until they got something equivalent, you know? But if you went free, I mean, think about, we're going to talk about the climate strikes, you know, the pollution, lack of pollution you'd be forced to expand the system, I think, and then there'd be more options. And, I mean, it would just be a higher quality of life in a lot of ways. And you could take that money that you're saving from transportation, which for some of us would be a lot of money, and try to survive better, basically. So around here, Boston, the idea has been come up, right? Like at least free buses. It got shot down immediately by well, you know, the Democrat, the head Democrats, and Sir Charles Faker and all that.
Did you hear what he said the other day?
Oh, I can't wait.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to make a... He talks right like Penguin, right? I'm going to make a policy where you can't arrest people that do... What is that when you you hop those...
Oh, yeah.
Somebody gets in behind you, you kind of go right with that person and go...
That's part of
And transit police grabs you
illegal free transit, yeah. Fare evasion,